Hello, Spacers. I'm Christopher Schmidt, and today I'm talking with Simon St. Laurent from O'Reilly the Media and Fluent Conference. We're catching up on technology news, stuff that we've done since we last talked, and just, you know, do a whole lot of catch up. It's great. It's good talk. Our sponsor is FluentConf. Put JavaScript, HTML5, CSS, and the latest web tools to work. The O'Reilly Fluent Conference is happening March 7th through 10th in San Francisco, and encompasses every major and emerging web technology and tool of the web stack. Stay on top of the latest technologies, see how all the pieces fit together, and learn how to easily compare tools and frameworks so you can choose the best one for the job. Listeners, use code NBSP. Again, that's NBSP when you register and save 20% off at fluentconf.com. Here's some notes. Tickets are on sale now for CSS DevConf 2016, the Alamo, taking place in San Antonio, Texas. Check out tickets and information, speakers and call for speakers at cssdevconf.com or on Twitter at cssdevconf. I'll be hosting a virtual conference on JavaScript, JavaScript Summit 2016, on February 23rd to the 25th. It's 3 days of awesomeness. We talk about animating with SVG, securing apps, React, Node, web components, and much, much more. Save 20% off when you use the code JavaScript. It's all responsive these days. The granddaddy Responsive Web Design Conference is back. The virtual RWD Summit will have 3 days of performance, responsive design, and development techniques at rwdsummit.com. I'll be hosting that. That should be really good. March 29th through the 31st. As always, with all the summits, you can get recordings with the purchase of the show. Be sure to follow me on Twitter at Telejet, TELEJECT, where I try to be witty in spite of my many, many typos. Thank you for liking and subscribing us at Non-Breaking Space Show on iTunes. Or you can have the show sent to your email by signing up at newsletter.nonbreakingspace.tv. Find show notes and links talked about in today's episode at nonbreakingspace.tv as well. Now, on with the show. Hey man, how's it going?
It's good. I'm home. I was in San Francisco last week and had an interesting time getting home, but I made it.
Yes.
Luggage?
Your luggage or you got
trouble
getting home?
No, well, I had lots of trouble getting home, but I got here, so.
Okay. Was it a snowstorm?
Yeah, basically the way to fly to Ithaca is through Newark, and that wasn't going to work. So I went through Chicago, and that was also complicated.
But. Okay. Would you want to, like, you know, this is a safe zone. If you want to unburden.
No, John Candy didn't show up, so it's not that exciting.
Okay. So, okay. Depends on which scene you're talking about. But, So you were in there for a conference, right?
Yeah, so I went to San Francisco for the O'Reilly Design Conference. It was nicely different from most of the shows that I go to. I mean, I know you hang with more design-specific people. I've worked with designers forever, but it's always been in, like, either a graphic design context or a web context.
Gotcha.
And this was a lot broader. Mm-hmm. You know, the keynotes were really kind of like broad design vision kinds of things that everybody could get to.
Like up with people type of things, like design will save the world.
Well, we hope so. Or the world needs a lot more designers. Like looking at the ratio of programmers to designers in the world, we could use a lot more designers. but it was really different from the stuff that I usually go to where, like, we're talking about design and we're talking about, you know, Flexbox and multi-column layout and how to make all these things happen in CSS. And,
The tools to make design happen, right?
Yeah. Like, I love the talk Jen Simmons gave last year where she went out and bought a copy of Vogue magazine and, you know, was talking about how we, you know, need to learn to do these things on the web. And that was great. But even that was like, you know, that's further out than I usually see. This was even a step beyond that.
Right. It's always been like a thing with web designers, I think, to take print and put it into web. But the web is not print. And I love Jen's talk. I mean, she won Best of CSS DevConf for the presentation. And I think if you can catch it, I think it's at Menopart. She's speaking there. So it's a really great talk. But, you know, it's like Jeff Veen and I think Jeremy Keith will tell you, like, you know, web has its own language, you know, how it operates. And so I think it's like, you know, and there's people like my dad who just like, you know, I remember him like in the 90s, like when I was like, I want to be a web designer. I'm going to do all these cool looking designs, everything. He's like, I just want the information. You know, I just want the info. I want to.
Right. Well, actually, one of my favorite moments, there was a shout out to Craigslist.
Yeah.
Which, you know, notoriously does not pay attention to visual design,
yeah.
but absolutely pays attention to information design. So, you know, that was kind of an interesting moment where I was like, yes, I'm in a different place than I usually am.
So the keynotes were kind of upper.
Yeah.
Any talks in the sessions that you liked? Or?
I didn't get to enough sessions. The one that I really wanted to get to but didn't get to was Designing for Evil.
Oh, that's freaking.
Which is basically about being prepared for the worst.
Oh, nice.
Because humans do these things.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a great talk from Dan Safra on creativity. A lot of the talks, you know, they went into hardware, they went into like semantics for like the information architecture side of the world. The process of collaboration. Which I love seeing in this context. I sometimes see programmers talking about collaboration, but it's mostly, you know, how to use GitHub and do pair programming and stuff. Design collaboration just seems a lot more inclusive.
Yeah.
And also just the whole, like, basically the design level that I've always worked on is pretty much the interface level. And hearing folks talk about experience just makes me happy. So it's good. Yeah, it was kind of my favorite comment from an attendee was that it was a design show that was not afraid of technology, but okay. It was not a technology conference.
Okay,
which for O'Reilly is amazing because we pretty much technology conferences. So
you said, you know, man, not me.
Sorry. I know. I chair a technology conference. I love that conference.
Yeah,
but every now and then it's good to get out and see something broader.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Awesome. Yeah. You know, I know about the design conference, but you know, can't break out and go see it. This is, I don't think I'm living in Florida, but I don't. I live in Texas, but it's still flight to get out there. Okay, cool. Yeah, it sounded pretty good. And I like that. When I saw one photo, the venue was that wrong? There's pews. It was a church. Was that?
Oh, yeah. Like, so they held the event at Fort Mason. So the keynotes were in like those big warehousey spaces. Oh, yeah. But they also had the general's quarters and the chapel. And so the chapel is probably what you saw. And, one of the speakers was like, wow, you could still smell the incense like deep in the wood. It definitely had a different feel to it.
Cool. Awesome. You've been recovering from that, from your travels with that and Snowmageddon, Snowpocalypse. I'm not sure what you're calling it.
I didn't get any snow here, so you know it was all in the places I had to go through. We provided the cold. It seems unfair that we didn't get the snow.
Yeah, exactly. I tell you, one thing I just been watching over and over again, the viral video of the snowboarding in New York City.
Yes.
And makes me laugh. It makes me smile. Not laugh, but it makes me smile every time I see it. And I've seen it too many times to mention, really.
Muscles are getting pumped up.
Yeah, it's just so stupid. Like, that's so silly of a movie, but it's like, but you know, it's, you know, the guy who does it is a YouTuber, like 2 million view subscribers, and so he knows he's been vlogging a daily vlog, whatever. So he knows how to edit on the fly, you know, not on the fly, but very quickly, and he knows the cameras. He's a director, so he knows his stuff, and then. And I just love how, I always love how the production, how they build it. And so there's a making of video, which I think is even cooler than the actual the snowboarder. And I don't think and that's coming from me saying that. That's
right.
Like a typical person would be like, I just like the cool video that's made for MTV, Chris. Like, okay, cool. But the making of, so like, he actually uses like 3 or 4 drones to get some shots. Before the 30 to 50 mph winds kind of like make it impossible.
Yeah.
To shoot in the battery life. So he's got some great overhead shots. by people who don't, by his friends who don't really fly drones and or shoot cameras, like they're not directors. So he's able to do a lot of cool things with some really cool shots and the number of hours out there. So it was a really fun thing, and I just love it. I think it's pretty good thing.
It's sort of that perfect combination of like a place we're used to seeing all the time, mm-hmm. with like completely different, unusual,
right?
Which is perfect. It also reminded me of, I think, the angriest I've seen my parents. We were just driving one day, and some kid on a skateboard grabbed our car.
Yeah,
it was basically rolling along attached to the car.
Oh yes, the Back to the Future.
Right? Yes, yes.
Oh, nice. The people actually did that. Okay. but also it was I was very cynical. This is not a new shocker to anyone who knows me, but cynical about the impending snowmageddon, snowpocalypse, whatever, because it was coming directly to DC and New York City, and you would not be able to hear anything about anything except how much snow in New York City and DC from news stations, because that's where they're based, you know, New York.
Right.
So that's what we're going to see. So I was really kind of like, oh, we're going to get this. And it just really kind of bugs me because we have these news sources on the internet and everything like that, but we're still have these like mainstream, if you will, news sources that dictate a good chunk of our change in terms of our news digest. You know, our diet is going to be about these two, like this snowstorm that's only going to affect these portions of people. And just to see this video of a guy having fun in New York City, it was just the right antidote.
Well, the thing that's perfect is, I mean, and this is true, I think blizzards are probably the best thing for this.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, like, going out and surfing in a hurricane just doesn't really sound like much fun. I'm gonna ride this tornado, man. It'll be great. But, you know, blizzards have this bizarre combination of, yes, they're dangerous, the cold, the winds, the don't be driving, and the, oh, man, this is fun. We can roll around. It's like that... the picture of the panda at the National Zoo. Did you see that one?
No, what was that about?
Basically, there was also a video of the panda at the National Zoo rolling around in the snow, being totally happy. I don't think it was nearly as well produced as the snowboarding, but it's hard to get pandas, well, to do anything they don't want to.
Yeah, pandas got to do what pandas got to do.
Blizzards to me are just like this kind of bizarre combination of frozen, terrifying, and wow, can I have one of those? I've been in New York when it got 2 feet of snow. I've been in Ithaca when it got like 3 feet of snow. And it totally disrupts everything. And I was really annoyed that I couldn't get a newspaper for 3 days. And, you know, I can live with that though. I think back to like the quiet, to the people building ski jumps on the streets.
Oh, yeah.
You just don't get to do that after a flood. It just doesn't.
Oh man, yeah, I lived through a flood. It's not fun at all.
Yeah, I don't recommend it. I think that's And I don't know what Austin would do if it suddenly got 2 feet of snow, but
it would freak out. We had frosting of snow, like just like a little dish, like a little salting of snow, and close the school down. So close the city down the whole entire day. And then it was last year, actually. And then another day it happened where it happened at the right time where the forecast couldn't commit either way. It was right down like 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning. So they closed down the whole entire city, and it turned out to be a beautiful day, but the whole city was off. So, so this city doesn't have any salting or whatever. It had to probably go to the state level to get the salting. So it was.
Yeah, I have a salt mine like 10 miles from me. So
this is grinds to a halt pretty much, and freaks out about it. And I lived in like Chapel Hill when we had like an ice storm come through. And what really gets my goat, like you talk about hurricanes and all that stuff. This is where I complain a lot. But it's like if we, you know, you have a hurricane coming, you have a snowstorm coming, our weather is really great. You just have to like get out of the way, prepare.
Yeah,
enough time, and then our weather is so awesome compared to like, you know, being a caveman times is like being a paleo or whatever. They'll actually tell you a good hour, like within 2 or 3 hours of when something's going to hit. It amazes me because like cities, Chapel Hill, like which is used to snow, which is used to like ice storms every once in a while, whatever. just closed down in the morning, even though the storm was coming in the afternoon. So I couldn't get my errands done that morning or run around because everyone was just freaking out. Gotta get home. I'm like, we have plenty of time. We have
You got to buy your bread, eggs, and milk. It's very important.
I think that's like an instinct that we've not gotten over yet. I don't know.
I flew into Greensboro Airport once right after an ice storm, and I was really grateful to get a cab ride from this Russian guy who clearly knew how to drive on ice.
That's the thing. That's the most fearful thing, though, is people who don't know how to drive on ice. So,
yes.
Was he doing like crazy eights on the ice?
No, we were driving down. We were driving down Interstate 40 at about 20 miles an hour. But you know, he knew how to keep us from going off the road. So that was awesome.
All right, cool.
So,
cool. Well, we did the SVG summit while while you guys were doing a design conference, and so that was actually really fun. That was it was a virtual conference, which is you know, it's always good because I feel like it's we reach out people who can't make a physical conference sometimes with great content, and so and we had you know, we had Ryan Ireland from Jingo on, we had Sarah Drasner, who is writing a book with O'Reilly, which is awesome, which I found that out during the summit, and then so she's doing, I guess, an advanced animated SVG book for you guys. And then, but her talk is always great. I think I've heard it like 3 times by now. So it's a really great talk. And then, because she won Best of CS at DevCon. And then we had Brenda Storer and Ryan. They did kind of like a basic intro to SVG. And then we had a couple people who just, Chris Gannon and like Dilly Storer, who have just been doing some awesome things with CSS animations and CSS design. It's SVG animations and SVG design. So I just have them pick their brains, and like it's pretty much like a show and tell to the catalog type of like what they're thinking of how they approach things. And so it was really kind of cool to see them deconstruct what they did and how they did it. And it just pretty much just have to learn GreenSock. I think that's what I came away with.
Yeah, GreenSock's making a lot of people happy. I'm just happy that like you had an SVG online conference, because like I did a book. David Eisenberg wrote an SVG Essentials book for us back in like 2002.
Yeah.
And it was a great book. It was one of my favorite books, but then SVG like totally faded from the world.
Right.
And we finally did the second edition of that last year.
Yeah. And now Amelia.
SVG is conquering. Yeah. Amelia is awesome.
Yeah. Amelia was actually, she attended the summit. And so, we had Chris Coyer do a wrap up session at the end, and that, you know, I don't know what he was going to do, because we just have a wrap up panel and just, you know, take questions from the audience and we'll just take it from there. But so he did a really good wrap up of the day and tossed in some cool ideas. His slides are available online, so put them in the show notes. But the cool part was that we had a 6-person wrap up panel online. And so we had Amelia was there. So she came online with Chris Scannon, Dilly Storer, Brenda Storer was there, and Sarah Drasner came on. So it was just like, it was just this great roundtable, and people just, you know, ask questions and talk to each other. And so it was pretty fun time. And so I think it was a good shot in adrenaline for SVG.
Yeah,
And like, you know, I was totally with you, like, because I was the old fogey there too, because I was just like, oh, I remember SVG back in 2001. Right. Like Adobe had a plug-in because they won the compete against Media Flash. And
right. I remember seeing a talk that some Microsoft guy gave that used SVG, and he's like, oh, wait, before I say anything, I got to tell you, this does not mean that Microsoft is ever going to support SVG. It's just a demo that I did. But, you know, the last, like, year, even the last 6 months, like, Amelia's, you mentioned Sarah Drasner is writing for us. Amelia's also writing for us. She's been doing great things on basically every level of SVG. And the stuff she's working on now is more about kind of integrating it with regular web stuff than just SVG itself, which is really where a lot of the juice is coming from. Like once that became possible, it wasn't just, I'm going to export this thing from Adobe Illustrator. Cool. It was like, wait, this changes the way I do the web. I think my favorite thing was still Estelle Weil's clown car, the SVG clown car for the responsive images. It was a bizarre hack. Brilliant. And it showed you could actually use these things in totally unexpected ways.
Yeah. So I was the old fogey who brought that one up too, because my claim to fame is actually I gave her the name Clown Car. That's my claim to fame. So we actually had, like, if you ever join our online events and join live, we give away O'Reilly ebooks for free.
Yeah.
Pick one ebook. And so we had the SVG pool of books from O'Reilly, and Amelia had either co-written or written all of them. So it was just like, I don't know which book Amelia picked of hers, but
She came in as a tech reviewer on SVG Essentials, and David liked her work so much that she became an author, and we've worked with her since on a bunch of other things. So
I actually asked him to be a part of the SVG Summit, because I knew he wrote the book in 2001. It'd be awesome to have him be a part of it, but I never heard back from him, so I don't know.
He's teaching classes, he may not have been able to.
I met him at the OSCON in Portland, and so I was like, hoping to connect with them. So
I'm actually going to be we're going to be updating our Introducing Elixir book in a completely different universe of technical stuff. Sarah will be keynoting and giving a talk at Fluent as well. So so lots more SVG coming.
Well, I mean, see, other than that, I've been in kind of different worlds.
Okay.
So I'm in the WordPress world for a little bit, and then I've had the SVG world a bit, and so now I'm getting to a little bit of JavaScript, but not too much. I mean, so it's been kind of crazy. I haven't really noticed any hot drama, but since we talked, I've been sick for 2 weeks, so it's been kind of like catching up with the world.
Yeah, I had just the kind of the travel recovery time, but I think I just barely dodged getting sick. We'll see. I've got a couple of things going that have me thinking. One is I've been working really slowly on this woodworking book, basically a book for beginners written by a beginner, which is always a dangerous thing to do. But I was thinking of it as a book. And then sometime over the holidays, I was like, most people are going to read this on the web anyway. Why am I doing this as a book? And I'd been using O'Reilly tools. I'd been, thinking of like this linear form and all of this kind of like, here's how the pages go, here's how this goes. And I decided that really wasn't going to work. Even though like the core of the book is a linear sequence, there's just all this stuff off the side that I wanted to do. Right. And then I started looking at my stuff as a website, and like it all fell apart. So like the whole joy of crossing media, like I've got to come up with a whole new set of structures. I'm still sort of hanging on to Jen's talk from an event apart about the formatting, because I've got all of these options now. I should actually use some. I've got a project where if it breaks, it's okay. It's not a crisis. So that's been just kind of fun, like falling back into the, how do I design this stuff and make it actually look good? I even found that like my copywriting felt terrible. Things that looked fine on a printed page felt hideous on the web. That hasn't happened to me in a while. The other really odd thing, and this is web related but sort of different, is that I've been using all kinds of stuff in Google Docs for work and for some other stuff, and I've kind of reached the point where it's annoying me. I mean, like I don't like spreadsheets anyway. I can do pivot tables if I have to, really, but there's all of this Google application script stuff, which I mean, it's giving me flashbacks to VBA on Microsoft Excel and stuff, but and it's weird because I'm on the web, but it's not quite web programming, but it's kind of like that. And what do I do with this? That's just kind of got me thinking about all the strange new places the web is going. It will probably keep going. I have really like strangely churning feelings about this, but we'll see how it all feels.
Like, what do you mean by feelings about like where it's going? Or,
well, like I sort of grew up with, it's the web and we're going to do all of these things in classic standardized approaches, and with the Google application scripts, it's like, yes, JavaScript, but all of these objects are like not the ones that I remember from my dynamic HTML days. They don't even look like there's just all kinds of things that are similar but weirdly different. And I just gotta kind of reorient myself. I want to create some things that I can. I want to create some interfaces that look better than spreadsheets and share them with people. And as I'm doing this, I'm kind of like, you know, I can do it in this, but why can't I just do it as a web page? Oh, because I'm locked into this other world that's on the web but not of the web. It's just kind of a weird like hall of mirrors feeling. I don't know how much stuff you do that's like web-like but not on the web.
Maybe I should do more web stuff offline, I guess. I don't know.
I sort of had this feeling when I was working on that iPhone application with Jen Robbins.
Yeah.
The HTML thing, because you know, that was all targeted to iPhone and iPad, and that felt weird too.
Yeah.
But at least it was all like familiar programming pieces that I'd used for years. So it wasn't quite as strange.
Well, one thing I did do is talk to Jeffrey Zeldman.
Oh yeah.
And we did the a podcast and talked about it was kind of a little bit morbid some parts, but just talking about the because it was David Bowie had died.
Right.
Not too long ago. And I'm still trying to like process that because I didn't know I'm a big David Bowie fan, and so just to go back and to his catalog and see his life work, you know, not just his life but just his work, and just see how much work he did in the 70s alone was just amazing. I guess that's where he made his name. It's just crazy, just and his ability to, hey, for this album, I'm gonna be art punk rock space guy, and then this next one, I'm gonna be more soul, and to be able to have the fearlessness to change styles and push it out there, and to do a great job with it each time, or at least you know. Or like it wasn't probably number one hits pretty much, but it was just to be able to say it's a solid record, you know, just like, hey, this is a solid record. Most artists, you know, bands can't say, you know, like, oh, at least he put out, you know, 9-12 songs on his album that, you know, pretty solid. And I was just like, well, that's pretty awesome. He's able to, and like within like 5 years or so, he's able to push out like 5 or so albums. I felt like holy cow, that's a great role model almost in a way to have like that. And so, And then we talked about, of course, the death, and the morbid part was that, you know, on his birthday, a couple days before he died, he put out this, you know, Black Star album with the song Lazarus on it. And everyone was like, oh, ho-hum, when it came out. It was like, oh, this is really great. He put it out for his birthday, and then you know, 2 days later, he dies. And then you go back, and then you, like, re-examine it on its new, like, you know, contextualized, like, oh, he was dying for cancer for 18 months. Like, what? And then you re-examine the video and his the album, and it's like, oh man, it's just such to go out on your, well, I mean, you don't want to go out, but it's like to go out on your as much of a creative terms as he could.
Yeah,
Dealing with everything is just amazing. And how many?
Apparently, it's his first number one album too.
Yeah, and then to be able to do that, and I'm sure his back catalog is getting like a re-examined. In fact, the music industry, 2015, like their back catalog sold more in terms of money than the songs written that year, like all the new songs written that year. So every Kanye West song, every Pitbull song that you heard sold, you know, all the new stuff sold less in the back catalog. And that's the first time it's happened ever, I think. So I think it shows you like, I hate to say like it shows you like new music sucks because I feel like I'm an old guy saying that, but it just feels like just shows you how much easy access we have to a back catalog than we'd have before, right? You can just go to a record store or get music now. Now you can go and get anyone's back catalog really cheap and easily than you could ever before. So it's pretty. I think it says a lot too about the preservation of our data, of our work, and then that got us thinking about. The work that we do for the web, right? So the web pages that we work are like they're temporary things. Like, and I was my metaphor is like we're trying to build the greatest or the greatest everlasting sandcastle. So it's just like, but no matter how awesome our sandcastle is going to be, it's going to be wiped away by the ocean, you know, or some new people are going to come on to step on it or whatnot, because I make this point. It's like Jeffrey Savine said, like even news websites are going to have the same old article if they really store it, but it's going to have new ads placed all over it. And so the context of the newspaper article, you know, and a newspaper as a timepiece is going to be totally lost. So like, you can't, you know, like, do we put like an iPad in a time capsule and just put that in there or whatever? So yeah, so like, and it's like, I think like, well, what do we do with our work as a fixed point? And so that's, and I was not getting me thinking about the book. People always contemplate about book of the future. Was the book future of the book look like? And you know, my mentor in college worked on a project, our project called the Future of the Book, and so I helped out with that project as well. But you know, I think we always compare the future of the book, a future like album of the book, because you know it's the gold standard. Because the books are going to be around, and they've been around for so long, I don't see them going away anytime. It's just so. But when you compare that to the website, you know, it's just like, if you know, like David Bowie dies, passed away, right? You know, like, what's his website going to look like 5 years from now, 10 years from now? And then what if like Joe Schmo, web designer, like, what does your website look like? You know, like if one of their like his ancestors come around, like, hey, what did he do? Like, oh, well, he did some websites. That's cool. Like, do you have any work to show for it? Like, no, not really. I don't. Yeah, am I bumming out everyone? I'm not sure.
No, I mean, it's like, it's kind of funny. Like, even with my, you know, sort of living site, I really need to do like a major update. I did a bad RSS feed thing a few years ago and haven't updated anything. Yeah. But there are parts of it that I basically intend to leave in deep freeze.
Yeah.
Because they, you know, they're the way they were when I first wrote them, and I don't think there's any reason to change them, and I could. I did at one point change a style sheet on one of my older sites from sans serif to serif.
There you go.
Because I was feeling, you know, fancier or something. But it is kind of a weird thing. Like, even though I'm still, you know, working with books, I spend less time physically with books than I used to. Mm-hmm. Certainly less time physically with O'Reilly books.
Right.
But when we publish a book, like, part of the weird promise of a book is that if any one of those copies just happens to survive someplace, even if the rest of them get pulped, you still have the whole thing.
Right.
On the web, I mean, we have the Internet Archive, which sort of sometimes helps things. But it's not the same kind of like permanent physical memory. I also listen to a fair amount of like 20s and 30s music. And reading the stories of these people who'd like go out like looking for old 78s, and it sort of got into this like bizarre competition between them for who could get the best quality copy of this obscure record and pay the least for it and stuff like that. But I think, you know, it seems to have been a bad month for rock stars generally. But I think that's got a lot of us thinking about, you know, so what lingers on after we're gone, or what even lingers on after we lose interest. I mean, that's been something else that's happened on the web a few times. People have just said, okay, I've had enough. 410 on.
Even like, was it Mark Pilgrim wrote a great HTML5 reference. I mean, just, you know, he's really great reference. He's just like, oh, I'm gone. And he was tired of dealing with that. I think he was just tired of dealing with people who wrote to him and say like, hey, can you answer this HTML5 question? I can see that people assumed he was the HTML5 spec holder or guru about HTML troubleshooting. And so he just turned it off. And then so everyone kind of grabbed people around HTML5. Like, they, you know, they put I think it's on GitHub now. They made a GitHub repo and pointed it up there. So it's not lost to the edges. We're able, like, oh, okay, we have it.
Yeah.
And we get to redirect it. But, you know, still, it's like, you know, and then,
Why the Lucky Stiff did similar.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, like, and then do only pop culture things survive than other things too. So, but you talk about records and music, like, there's a great documentary I saw at South by Southwest called 78 Project, the 78 Project.
Okay.
And it's a crowdfunded movie project. And they just wrapped up, from what I could tell, their movie. And you actually download it the 78 Project. Just do a Google search for that. And what they do is actually they go out and find great artists who know a song that's, I forget what the type of song it is, but it's like kind of folk art music. And they have a machine that will record the audio wherever you are, and like a record, and you only get one chance at it. So it only records one side. And so they actually find the people in the middle, like nowhere, pretty much, and say, okay, we just sing a song, and we'll go to your house, go to your nowhere, and just record it, and record this music. And so that's probably lost. And they won the, I forget his name, but one of the people they found was like this guy who just collects vinyl. There's records that you can't really find anymore in his whole house. It's just like vinyl records.
So there's a picture somewhere of a guy's bathtub full of records.
Oh, geez. Yeah. And then, yeah. I guess the insert joke about mail servers and bathrooms here, but anyway.
Yes.
So we'll come back to the later piece here. Come back. So it's just, you know, what do we do to retain our copy? And so I think that goes to, like, if you're a young designer listening to this, I would say make sure to save copies, do a screenshot of your work, of your code, and make sure you store it locally. And that gets me thinking about Sean, who used to work at South by Southwest, he used to South Interactive for a while, and he gave a great keynote at a Drupal conference in Austin. And this goes back to one of the reasons why I'm going back to WordPress and learning more about it is that it's like just own your own stuff and don't rely on Facebook and to host your photos or whatnot, because they'll just shut down and you'll lose your right. photos, lose your memories, lose your postings. And
GeoCities.
Yeah. Who was I talking to? Was it Brenda? I think it was Brenda. She built a GeoCities website. She was able to save it because she burned the files onto a CD-ROM, and she had just discovered it one day off of his folder, off to the side on the CD-ROM, and she uploaded it to GitHub. So now her GeoCities page, I think it's about Robbie Williams, is saved for all time. So we go, oh, okay, cool. But hopefully, I don't know.
I almost lost a bunch of stuff when AOL shut down its personal website stuff.
Yeah. Or when Apple shut down their webpage hosting service, there's a lot of great plugins and great tech stuff that was hosted on Apple sites and service accounts. So yeah, so just save what you do. But it also just goes back to Jeremy Keith's idea as well, as from the keynote from Sean, was just able to post your own stuff, own it. And so that's one of the beautiful things that got me interested in the web in the first place. I think that's where I'm trying to find my own inspiration, the original inspiration again. I guess I may have lost a long way. I don't think I lost it, but just like I haven't really done it. But it's just published again, on my own site, and to be able to say, hey, Facebook, you can have this, but you have to, like, I'm just going to shoot a copy to you and not post it on your site. And then just have it be on my site and host it there. And so and to do it that way.
I've got to get back to doing that. I mean, some of the stuff that's inspiring me on this is the indie web stuff. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of techniques and tricks and tools to make these things go more easily. Right. But for the last, 5 years, I've probably been doing almost all of my writing on other people's sites.
Yeah.
I still have a movable type site running. Movable type itself isn't running because some upgrade killed it. But because it's static content, it's all still happy in there. This is also reminding me of a lot of XML conversation I used to go to was about like archival formats and text-based formats will make it easier for us to figure out what happened in a million years when people are doing the archaeology of this stuff. And mm-hmm. there are all these concerns that XML would just, people would create their own vocabularies and nobody would know what the vocabularies meant anymore. And
right.
I always thought that was kind of overblown because it's usually not that much harder to read the markup than it is to read the text. But anyway, at this point, it almost seems to me like HTML has kind of become that archival format.
Yeah.
It's a living archival format. I'm not saying it's dead, no. But it's so ubiquitous. It's actually for a medium in current times, it's lasting quite nicely.
Yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, if you have a browser and you have your web page, it should work. So
yeah, and even if you don't know what a browser is and you look at it, you can, well, for some stuff you can figure it out. If you actually look at the Google homepage, don't try to figure it out.
Yeah. But then pretty much. Yeah, so I think it goes back to just, I think, you know, just owning who you are. I think that goes to what you publish, and I think that's also something I've been kind of grappling with, just like being okay publishing what you do. And that goes back to just being inspired by the New York snow skiing guy, because he's got too many viewers now, but not that this has anything to do with popularity, but I was just like, I think he was successful in that he got too many viewers, subscribers, gradually, but then within 6 months, he went from like 1 million over 4 or 5 years, got to like 100 million subscribers to 2 million subscribers within 6 months. And part of that was just practicing and vlogging every day. And not that means anything, you know, like popularity, fame, or whatever, that like it comes and goes, but I just feel like it just makes you a better writer. It makes you, like, your thoughts get crystallized more, and you get to share your ideas to more people quickly if you actually capture them and crystallize them. And then if you write great HTML, maybe 200 years from now, people will find your bad poetry. I don't know.
So. Yeah. Well, it's all about the bad poetry. It always is. It's very important.
It's like I own the bad poetry. But yeah.
Yes. Well, we should, you know, do something where we're, like, carving it into stone, and then maybe that'll last more than a week.
Some tablets, but yeah, I don't know, man. Then I have to go find the refrigerated room, cold storage tablets, so they don't turn to powder. And then, you know, if you get the wrong tablets, they'll.
That's true.
You gotta put them in an ark, and you put the Ark of the Covenant, and they'll. Like,
it's really difficult. And actually, looking at old gravestones makes me think this is harder than I'm thinking. So
yeah, even the gravestones at with Boston in is this. With their unique style and everything like that, like
yeah,
you know, the bus tour, like the Red Line tour they have there. It's just man, yeah, just you don't know who's buried half the time. So and yeah, so but that's why you need GPS and units and for smartphones and be able to track.
Yeah, there actually are, like, the genealogists are all over this kind of stuff, like knowing all of who's in there and where. And I'm not sure they've really reached the point of using GPS for individual graves, but I'm sure somebody's working on it. GPS will get that next level of accuracy, and we'll be all good.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be morbid, but it just comes up naturally.
Well, like, it's winter.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah, and I guess so.
It's winter. It's been a bad year for rock stars.
winter killed the rock star. Oh, no.
There we go. Well, it's also good to stop once in a while and think about where the stuff is going. Actually, when I was at CSS DevConf last year, one of the big divides I found in the audience was between people who create a site and then, like, move on and forget about it and do the next one, and the people who are stuck there maintaining.
Oh, wow, yeah.
And, like, their attitudes towards how to use CSS were really strikingly different.
Yeah.
That was, you know, I tend to be the guy who's stuck maintaining things, so I want everyone else to be stuck with me. You know, for a lot of people, it is kind of a once and done.
Yeah.
So, having conversations like this one that kind of at least make them think, okay, so I've done this once, it's done. What now?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there's also liberating in that you can actually build a small project and then you move on. And so it's self-contained and you can just not have to worry about it anymore. So that's, you know, pretty good to do that too. But yeah, so just keep on building small projects.
That's how I like doing it. I mean, the woodworking book thing has me a little worried because it's clearly bigger than anything else I've done in a long time.
Yeah.
And it has the potential just to keep growing. So am I, like, chaining myself to a Leviathan? I guess I'll find out. I don't know if anybody's going to. That's the two big fears. One, is anybody going to want to read this at all? Will anybody ever look at this stuff?
Mm.
When they come in from Google, are they just going to bounce right off? And then the other one is, oh, God, if this is popular, what do I do then? Oh!
Those are problems I have, my friend. So
that's true.
But yeah, I think it's kind of weird because, like, we talked about this Zellman, and, like, he actually has, like, I'm holding up a mouse pad.
Yeah! Yeah!
I don't know if you have one or not.
I don't have one, but those are awesome.
Yeah, so... WebSafe color palette, which is cubed and... rectangular in nature, like it's for engineers. And so I just, like, hey, I take a WebSafe palette, I put it in a color wheel, slap it on a mouse pad, because everyone has to have one, a mouse pad. and sold like 20,000 of them at least. I don't know. I forgot.
All right.
And then laser pointer mouse, Mice's mouse, I don't know, whatever.
Yes.
It came out, and then everyone didn't really need one. And so I actually, people complained, like, I don't really need one because my mouse doesn't need one. It's like, yeah, cool, whatever. And then monitors got better and didn't really need to sell it. But the reason I bring that up is because, like, I get to the mentality of, like, I really don't care what people think. I really want one.
Right.
And I'm crazy enough to put this on a mouse pad, but because I really want one. And so I had to invest and buy 500 mouse yes. pads to get one. And I was just like, great. Now I have to go sell $4.99 of these because I can't have them in my garage. And they sold out. And I was like, holy cow. I guess I'll print some more for a while. And then and you just never know. Like, you have to be crazy enough to want it. Is my rationale behind that? Just because, like, you need to, if you want it for yourself, I think, and there's, you want it so badly that you want to put a shit out there. I think you just have to go do it. And so that's and I think this book is gonna be awesome for you. So I think if you want to do it, just do it, well, and then not think about what other people think about it. So
I think my rules for writing are kind of the same as my rules for programming. If nobody else has really done what I want, then I will go out and try to do it.
Right.
Like, I'm not a great programmer. You don't want me really writing lots of code. But I can do it if I have to and nobody else is doing it. Okay, I'm in.
Right.
And with writing, it's like, okay, I've read a lot of books. None of them are what I want. Okay, let's try this other thing. Yeah. I don't have to buy 500 copies, though, if I put it on the web. That's all pretty easy.
Yeah.
So maybe there'll be a print edition eventually, though, and then I'll have to figure it out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, so, I see. And this is the power of the printing press. This comes from a guy who, like, you know, I started out in journalism and newspaper, mm-hmm. and it's, you know, go, part of my job was sometimes just to go check the printing press of a newspaper and see if they had any, like, the people who worked there, see if they had any issues. And which never happened, which is like, whatever. But big printing press. And it's just like, you know, before the web, it was just like, you know, the joke is like, you know, whoever has a printing press, you know, it's not really a joke because I can't remember the punchline. Yeah, it controls the news and so all you need is your own printing press, but they only cost like $1 million and tons of ink and, you know, which costs money and some of that too. So to be able to own your own printing press is legendary, and to have people who, you know, own their own business because it's their brand, because they own their own websites, it's kind of an amazing thing. Just, you know, I don't know.
Well, it's interesting because you don't have to own the printing press anymore unless you're doing letterpress.
Right.
And there is like a giant magazine printer like a quarter mile from my house, and I've never been inside and I really want to, and now I've got to go ask. But the thing is, like, you can print all the stuff you want, but you still have that problem of, is anybody looking?
Right.
And when it used to be limited to people who had printing presses, there were just a few of them. So of course everybody was looking because it was only two or three things that they could kind of favorite. That part of it has really changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
I need to figure out how to, like, shoot videos of snowboarding in Times Square to get
exactly, yeah,
visitors to my...
Oh, man, because I went to that, what is it, that YouTube conference? VidCon, yeah. Right? And I actually went to workshop, air quotes, workshop, about how to make a viral video, right?
So I was
and there was absolutely nothing that you like no one knows how to make a viral video, right? So people can know how to make so it's kind of like just work it in the round of like how to make an idea for a viral video sound, you know, make it authentic, make it unique, make it edgy, but then you still need to do the editing of it, and you still need to do so even if you have something awesome and you need to edit it in terms of a manufactured viral video, not like something that's actually like just something awesome going on, but you still need to edit it and you still need to game plan for it, and so there's just a lot of work involved, and no one knows what makes a viral video, so it was my upshot from learning about that. So the only thing to do is practice snowboarding in New York City is what I'm coming down to, really. It's just,
yeah, the blizzard I was there for last time, I tried to go cross-country skiing in Central Park, but other people had the idea before we did, so all the skis were, you know, rented. Bring your own snowboard, definitely.
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, man. Well, I think we just killed it. I think we just brought everyone down, the audience, if there's listening.
With the snowboard or with the, there's no way to create a viral video predictably.
Yeah, that too. I think that's
actually the real problem. If we could all create viral videos predictably, everything would be beautiful and happy. And we wouldn't even be worried about how long these things would last because there'd always be more viral videos.
Oh, man. Oh,
geez. You know, I think about the poor guy, Psy, coming up with something after Gangnam Style. Like, how do you...
How do you follow that up, right?
How do you... You can't. It's just not possible.
Well, it's too famous now, man. You can't.
Or you do what Bowie does and just change everything completely. You
know. Well, I think Bowie, this could be totally wrong, but from what little, like, scratching the Bowie biography that I've done, is that he got famous and, you know, kind of aloof, which is totally Bowie, whatever, and that it couldn't reconnect a little bit to society. So, like, I feel like that's the problem. It's like, and, you know, that's the main worry, probably, which is becoming famous and stuff. But I'm willing to tackle that problem head on if I need to, right? So if you become famous, I'll just deal with it in the best way possible.
Well, neither of us are Bowie famous, but we do get these strange moments where we're up on stage and, you know, running the show and all of that kind of stuff. And that's pretty weird as it is. I don't even really want to know what it's like to be Bowie famous.
Oh, man. Yeah, so it's just, CS DevConf has been working on. That's been
excellent.
Yeah, I've been working on the new one. So trying to get all our ducks in a row. We're supposed to announce this week. That's kind of got me down. That's probably why I'm morbid. So we're supposed to announce this week, but our venues can kind of. I just want to tell you what the problem is. Like, one of the major problems is, okay, so the venue, I love the venue. I'm going to love the location. It's different than what we've done before. Mm-hmm. So we do okay. And so we will announce the venue, but we want to make sure we have the people can register for the hotel right away. They get blocking great rates, you know, whatever you do, right? So we actually kind of like work them down off their price point a little bit, so it's a little cheaper for people to show up. So great. So they give us a link to the reservation system. Awesome. It happens to be this clip art of like little weeble wobble people, like nondescript people, blue colored, all ties on, all male, like
fingers, right?
Male icons, right? Except there's, and then there's just one big red one with a suitcase, right? I guess the guy with red has a suitcase. And I'm like, I could have gone with a nondescript photo, like,
yeah,
photo of the hotel, like some, like, you can show me like anything within the hotel, but you get me like a bunch of male icons.
Like, is it on Mars? Like,
huh?
It just sounds like it's on Mars, but
I feel like talking to like Ari about this is like, I think they think someone did a good job, you know, and they like made it different, and like I was like, oh man. So we've been waiting like 2 or 3 days for them to change it. We actually made our own photo graphics like to give to them and say like, it could be a hotel photo that you have. Here's one I took of your venue when I was there.
Right.
So cropped, optimized.
Right.
So, you know, and then they were like, so we're waiting for that to actually happen.
Yeah, I would be worried, like, registering for the hotel would turn me blue or something.
Yeah, exactly. He's like, am I seeing the Blue Man Group here? I was like, what's going on? But yeah, so that's been kind of a hold up, but did that. But so I've been waiting. I've made this announcement for it, and it's just been waiting and waiting. So
I'm just glad it's soon. So yeah. That's good.
Yeah. So that's about it for me, I think. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, I'm just getting geared up for Fluent, which is in March, so I'm happily staying home until then. So yes. That's a good thing.
Yes. So yeah, we're staying home for we're not doing a lot of traveling this year, so it's pretty good. But yeah. So Fluent.
Fluent's March 7 to 10. There's training on the 7th and 8th, and then there's the workshops of the 8th, and then the 9th and 10th is the what everyone thinks of as the conference. So. So, I'll be out in San Francisco for that. But until then, I'm home. I don't have to deal with Snowmageddon unless it comes here, in which case I'll be a lot happier about it.
Yeah, cool. And then, I do have a question for you, like, before we wrap up.
Yeah.
Why do we, like, you are awesome at Facebook and posting on Facebook, but it's a walled garden. Like, why do, and I like Facebook. I post a lot more on Facebook. Why do we do that? Like, why do we?
Well, so the reason I post there, I'm kind of making my Twitter account more of a work account. Because I just couldn't find ways to make Twitter work like for fun conversation that I was into. I have friends there. I'm still going to talk to them. It's all good, but it's just a lot less conversational. On Facebook, partly because people at least kind of sort of know each other, and they mostly know me. I do have a few friends on Facebook who I never have actually met or talked to outside of that context, but not a lot. My favorite is a friend who found me through another friend who I'm no longer friends with. So, you know, she's awesome. He's not. That's fine. But I find, you know, if I post something, and I probably post too much, sometimes I get silence, and that's fine. But sometimes I get, you know, real conversation on a level that I just can't find in, well, certainly not in Twitter. And occasionally I would get in comment sections or similar things like that. On, you know, like the O'Reilly site, I would sometimes have great comment threads. On my own blogs, I would sometimes have conversations that were useful. But my odds of getting a real conversation are a lot higher on Facebook than they are other places.
Is that because of like people?
I don't know.
Because of friends and family, they know you, they feel safe.
Well, it's interesting because like I a friend of mine is like 180 degrees away from my politics. You know, and she's awesome. She writes fiction. She does all of these other things that are great, but she never ever comments in a political thread of mine. And then she posted the other day. And I actually, like, I wrote her a thank you note. Because I was like, thank you. This is great. You came over. I know it was, you know, different, but thanks. I think to some extent, yes. I mean, people on Facebook are kind of self-segregating. I know who the likely suspects are to post on my political posts or my technical posts, my family posts. If I post on things Irish and tragic, I get yes. I know who will respond. And it's always good conversation. It's just like, I sort of know. And I think over time, they've kind of gotten to know each other.
Yeah.
I think that helps a bit. I'm maybe a little obsessive with liking people's comments. Yeah. That helps some too. I feel weird about like, because it doesn't mean I agree with them. Right. But I think we've all sort of figured that out. I wish I could have more conversations like that that were electronic, but were not in Facebook. Mm-hmm. It still doesn't compare to some of like the epic stories I've heard of The Well or Usenet in its best days or that kind of thing.
Pre-spam.
That's a lot of it.
Right. Yeah, because like I think Facebook does is it actually it goes by the comments, right? Because the comments, your name is there, right? They will. I don't know what it's been a while since I signed up for Facebook, but you actually have to be the person signing up for it. You can't be like, usually most cases, you can't be a spoof account. And since your friends there, or your family's there, and you want to connect with them, you're more inclined to use your own name. And I remember sites actually drop their comment system for their blog system and actually use Facebook's comment system just because more people are inclined to be nicer to each other because their comments will probably show up on Facebook if they are.
Yeah, it sort of works. I mean, like looking at my local newspaper's comments, it definitely reduced the volume of violence and spam.
Okay.
But then there are also like, there's some groups that I follow that are like local history groups or there's like an Ithaca Issues group. There's still a lot of fire and brimstone in there. Mm-hmm. Really random fire and brimstone. So, Even though it's in the walled garden, even though you don't have the totally random noise, even when people know each other to some extent, it's not always paradise.
You're right.
There's a lot more active. I don't know. I don't feel like I really moderate stuff like people used to moderate comments, but there is something more about like participating and not just kind of broadcasting stuff and then seeing what people throw against it.
Okay.
It's a weird thing. I have hopes. I don't like to say that Facebook gives me hope because it doesn't usually. But, you know, just kind of seeing that conversation space makes me think that there is more we can do with this on the broader web. It's just going to take a lot of time, a lot of care. And Actually, the other awkward thing is, like, I've been posting on Facebook for like 7 years now.
Yeah.
Which is kind of hard to imagine. I do download like my complete set of whatever every now and then. You know, that the fact that it's been around that long and that we've had conversations for all this time, I think also is a lot of it. Mm-hmm. You know, there's some of that on Twitter. There are people I've known on Twitter since I signed up for Twitter, and I kind of know who they are.
Yeah.
But it's different.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. I think it's also for people who are non-techie to get Facebook and stay on Facebook and then
yes,
make your own thing. So.
Yes. I still, my Facebook feed definitely still trends techie. Mm-hmm. But it's way less techie than, say, my Twitter stuff or pretty much any other venue I'm in. So,
right, okay,
that may help with the conversation too.
All right, so sometimes I feel like an idiot for posting in a walled garden all the time.
Well, no, it is a walled garden. It's terrible. I totally know that. Yeah. You know, I mean, I really do have that information wants to be free virus, and that's part of why I'm doing the woodworking thing as a site instead of a book.
Right,
but. If I can't have a real conversation out in the wilds of the desert, I'm going to find a, you know, quieter place to do it.
Right. I guess.
That's a really bad metaphor, but you know.
That's like I was trying to parse that one. I'm sorry.
But. This year has been like the worst. Like I just am spewing random bad mixed metaphors like since the year began. So forgive me.
All right. So
yeah,
I say the best person I know about metaphors is Porter in DC actually. So I was, maybe you should do a masterclass in metaphors, but he's
that's a good idea. Yeah. I would love a masterclass in metaphors. Maybe I'm crazy.
Cool, man. Cool.
Yeah.
Well, it's been great. Simon, how can people find you on the internet and learn more about Fluent?
Well, the easy place to find me on Twitter is at SIMONSTL. Mm-hmm. Fluent is at fluentconf.com, FluentConf.com. And there you can find the conference. We have actually added one in Amsterdam in November too. So
Oh, nice. When
you go there, you'll see the March thing and the November thing. And right now we're all about the March thing. Yeah, Twitter's a good place to start to find me though. So,
Awesome. Cool. Well, thank you so much, Simon. This is great.
Thank you. This has been great. The morbid is all good.
Get out of our system in January so we can move on.
Exactly.
Yeah. No more dead rock stars, please.